Now, it's a curious thing. Catholics come out in droves for Ash Wednesday, which is great. I mean, that's the best way to start your Lent in preparation for the resurrection of Jesus, 40 days, 43 days, hence 44 days. I have to do my math. But in any case, once Lent is over and we move through the Triduum, that 3 days, it's not Tridium. Sometimes I hear people say Tridium. It's not Tridium, it's Triduum. And that means in Latin, 3 days. It's the 3 days from the conclusion of Lent and takes you Holy Thursday, Good Friday, Holy Saturday. And then we get to Easter, which is the resurrection of the Lord. And Ash Wednesday, being tomorrow, marks the beginning of Lent. And you know how that works. Chances are, even if you're not a Catholic, you know that Catholics get ashes on their forehead. Why do they get ashes on their forehead? Well, hearkening back to Genesis chapter 3, after God had created the cosmos and created Adam and Eve and placed them in the garden, and they failed the test being don't eat from the fruit of that particular tree right there. Everything else is for you. That one thing is not for you. Just that. That's all. Everything else, enjoy, but stay away from that one thing. And what did they do? They went to that one thing, and they ate of the forbidden fruit. That's where that phrase forbidden fruit comes from. In any case, so they failed a test, and they lost for themselves all those graces and all those gifts that God had given them, including that their bodies were preserved from corruption, from sickness. No coronavirus in the Garden of Eden. They would not have gotten sick. They would not have fallen down and broken a leg. They were intended by God to live forever. They had enlightened intellects. Unlike you and I, whose intellects are darkened, even though you may be a really smart person, you and I still, as a result of the fall, we have darkened intellects compared to how Adam and Eve were at the very beginning, FYI. Just imagine some of the really smart people you know, just imagine how much smarter they would be if we weren't living under the effects of the fall of Adam and Eve. They had control over their passions. You and I don't. For the most part, you and I don't. And we, when we do, we have to work really hard at it, don't we? That passion you have for the half gallon of ice cream that's sitting in the freezer calling your name, and you want that, and you have to master that unruly appetite and say, no, I know it's not good for me, so I'm not going to have that. We have a certain mastery over our passions and over our appetites, but we have to really work at it, and often they get the better of us, may I say to you. They didn't have that. Adam and Eve were free from those unruly passions and appetites. So they had appetites. They had appetites for sleep and for entertainment and for food, but they were able to govern their appetites wisely because their intellects were firmly in control of the appetites. And on and on and on it goes. So this laundry list of great things that Adam and Eve had that you would have had and I would have had if Adam and Eve hadn't sinned, we don't have. Kind of, it's the analogy that I use from time to time. Imagine if your parents were multi-billionaires and they had more money than Jeff Bezos has in lands and properties and businesses and all of those things. And all of that was rightfully yours. They would pass down, they would bequeath all of this wealth to you because you are their heir. And yet, they do a crime and they go to jail, and part of the penalty for the crime that they committed is that they forfeit all that wealth. You've heard me use this analogy before, but I think it really works. So there you are, waiting to receive this fabulous wealth that is legally yours. You have a right to it because you're their heir. Suddenly it's not there anymore. And they can't give it to you because they don't have it anymore. They lost it because of some stupid thing that they did. They lost it. So now you, who have done nothing wrong, you're left empty-handed. You don't get all that wealth. And you'll never get all that wealth, at least according to the current system. So think of it that way. That's what happened in the Garden of Eden. It was a catastrophic fall. And what made it all the more catastrophic was that, unlike you and I, who have to wrestle with concupiscence is that disordered inclination towards sin, where even though you know this is wrong, I shouldn't do this, there's something inside you that says, yeah, but I want to do it anyway. But it's wrong. It's insane. Why would I do that? It's wrong. Yeah, I know, but I want to do it anyway. That inner conflict that you may experience from time to time, where you're kind of toying with the idea, And you know that it's wrong, but there's this weird thing that like, it gets in the way of your reason. You say, well, I'm going to do it. That's concupiscence. That's a disordered inclination toward sin. It doesn't mean that we're totally depraved. The Calvinists are wrong about that. We're not totally depraved, but we're damaged. I am and you are. In any case, this is a universal condition. And you're saying, well, why is he talking? I thought it was Lent tomorrow. Yeah, here's why. Because when all of it fell apart and the wheels came off, and Adam and Eve were now about to be banished by God from the Garden of Eden, thrust out into, you know, the world as it really is, with nature not friendly to human beings, and snakes that'll bite you, and animals that will eat you if they can, and having to work for your food. They didn't have to do that before. Everything was there in abundance. They didn't have to lift a finger to work. I mean, they did work. Adam named the animals, etc., but they didn't have to work for their food. So all of these penalties now start accruing, and it's in this context in Genesis chapter 3 where God is pronouncing the series of maledictions. And you will have pain in childbirth, and your urge will be for your husband. And I'm going in not the exact order, but I'm going from memory here. He says all these different things, including you're going to have to work for your food, you're going to have enmity with nature, and it all includes things like sickness and eventually death. And he says to Adam and Eve, he says, you are dust, and to dust you shall return. That's the connection with Adam and Eve. Did you follow the popcorn trail? You are dust, and to dust you shall return. Point being is, now that you guys blew it, you will eventually die. You weren't going to die yesterday if you had just obeyed what I asked you to do. Simple thing, please, just enjoy everything else, just not this one thing. That's all. And you had to do that. And so you failed a test. And now, as a result of that, as the Bible says, the wages of sin is death. So physical death occurred to the human race as a result of that. And that's what happens on Good Friday. I'm sorry, on Ash Wednesday, pardon me. When you go forward to receive the ashes on your forehead, you will hear the priest or the deacon say, remember, man, that thou art dust, and to dust thou shalt return. And that's a quote from Genesis. And that's God's reminder to us that, all right, okay, Adam and Eve, they didn't pass the test, and lots of bad things happened to them and to all of you as a result of it. Again, don't think in terms of that you committed a sin. You didn't commit a sin in the Garden of Eden. Adam's sin, in essence, sort of spoke for all of us. He was speaking for you, even though if you had had a chance to tap him on the shoulder and say, please don't do that. The fact is, what he and Eve did, in particular what Adam did, it ruined things for the human race in general. So if you think about that analogy, all that wealth, you were the legal inheritor of all that wealth. Suddenly the wealth is gone. They can't hand it on to you anymore. You don't get it. That's perhaps a helpful way to think about this. So in the same breath of the priest saying to you as he imposes the ash on your forehead, in the same breath that pronounces this curse that God gave you, and don't get me wrong, the priest is not cursing you, okay? That's not what's happening there. But in Genesis chapter 3, where God pronounces these curses upon the human race as a result of Adam and Eve's sin, there's also the good news. You get the bad news and the good news at the same time. So as the priest is saying to you, remember, man, that thou art dust, and to dust thou shalt return, bad news. The good news is you will conquer death by being united to Jesus Christ, who is the second Adam. He is the one who came and put to right what Adam had destroyed. The second Adam, as St. Paul speaks about him in the Epistle to the Romans. Through one man, St. Paul says in Romans, sin and death entered the world. But it's that second Adam whose death on a different tree. Adam died on the tree of the knowledge of good and evil when he reached up and grabbed the fruit that had been forbidden, and he tasted of it, beguiled by his wife. But it was his fault. He tried to blame his wife, but Lord, the woman, she's the one who told, see, always the blame game. That tree and the fruit from that tree poisoned the human race. Not by, you know, the spiritual malaria of sin contracted in the Garden of Eden, not by the bite of a mosquito, but by the bite of an apple. And that tree and the fruit from that tree is what, in essence, killed the human race. So what does God do? He becomes one of us in the incarnation. Jesus Christ, second person of the Blessed Trinity, becomes man and becomes Jesus Christ. And in so doing, he, being the second Adam now, becomes the father of the race of all who accept his grace and forgiveness and achieve immortality all over again. And even better gifts are in store for you if you're close to Jesus. And it's the fruit from the second tree, the tree of Calvary, Christ himself, who remains with us in the form of the Holy Eucharist. That is the antidote that saves us from the poison of the first tree and the fruit that was eaten from the first tree. Do you see how that works? And in the garden, when God said to Adam and Eve, "Thou art dust, and to dust, and unto dust thou shalt return," Jesus is saying, okay, come with me, believe in me, follow me, and I will give you eternal life. I'll save you from the death that you're otherwise stuck with. Physical death, yes, it's something we all have to pass through. It's one of the effects of the sin of Adam and Eve. It's one of the temporal effects of Adam and Eve. And Christ's death on the cross, forgiving the penalty for your sin and my sin, doesn't take away that temporal effect due to sin. We're still under the ravages of illness and death and all the other things that happen. Those things are not taken away. That's part of the punishment. But the eternal punishment is removed. So tomorrow, the beginning of Lent, when you go forward and you receive the ashes on your forehead and you hear those ancient words that were pronounced by God who knows how many tens of thousands of years ago, in the mists of the earliest days of human existence, God pronounced those words and you hear them again when the priest or the deacon imposes the ashes on your forehead. Think about that. Think about all that was lost. And now think about all that you gain. You gain more than was lost by being a follower of Jesus Christ. And those ashes, although they are a pronouncement of your mortality and the fact that you in due time, you will die, as I will. May they be many happy long years from now that we experience that instant of death. But in any case, we will eventually die. But in the meantime, we're assured of victory. And your victory is in Jesus Christ. The key is you got to stay with him. You got to stay close to him. You got to be at the foot of the cross, not hiding out somewhere while Jesus is being crucified.